Health and Fitness with David Hollywood with the all-new Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. MidlandsParkHotel.com.
Midlands 103.
Hello and welcome to this week's programme. Let's check out what's coming up on the show. We're about to be joined by Leash's newest professional fighter. He's got talent and charisma in bucket loads. Mount Mellick's Keen Ready will be in studio momentarily. Cancer support services continue to struggle to make ends meet in Ireland. We talked to Doka's Cancer Centre in Tullamore about what's at stake. We're well into the busiest window in the club running scene. The Mullingar Harriers are with us to look forward to the Mullingar Road League. We catch up with a man who created history in the Offaly Senior Hurling Championship. He's now coaching in Down and he's on Health and Fitness to talk about the game of hurling and what it means to him. And we've got a line from the event in Moat that saw the Midlands Warriors Rugby Club launch their future plans and strategy, which includes securing a new ground. Clubs are there to support community. There's no better message, is there? I'm joined in studio by Mount Mellick's Keen Ready, the latest prospect from the region to announce that he's going professional. Keen, thanks for coming in to us this evening. You must be pretty excited having made the announcement now.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me. I'm delighted to have it done and to see the support that I got right after announcing it was class. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it and looking forward to the journey.
It is a different journey, isn't it? Because you've had a very positive and successful amateur career, but the stakes are much higher and the challenge is much bigger when it comes to the world of professional boxing.
Yeah, I had a great amateur career. I got to travel all over the world. Got to fight in America, Florida, Memphis, all over the place. And I always looked at turning professional since I was a kid. So yeah, it's a big risk, but the bigger the risk, the bigger the reward, they say. And I can't wait to get going and see how I get on.
Remarkable amount of reward available if things do go well. So that's obviously the dream. A person you know well over the years, Paul Lunan, was actually sitting in that very seat a week or two ago after he announced that he went professional. And you guys share a gym over in Naas. I suspect you'd speak as highly of Unit 3 as he was with me a couple of weeks ago.
Absolutely, yeah. I was listening live to Paul's interview. Me and Paul are friends and training together since we're only kids, 10 or 11 years old. And we've always followed each other and supported each other the whole way. And it's amazing the way things work out, you know, training together since kids. And now we're sharing a gym together in Unit 3 in Naas. And what an incredible gym it is. The lads, some amount of talent coming through between some of the amateurs. They have Aidan Byrne and Kelsey Leonard there, the amateurs. They have so many of them, that's just to name a few. But then they have the likes of Paul Lunan there, is about to make his debut next week. Mm. Gary Cully is on a massive card in Leeds on May 25th. That's just some of them, and it's great to be there with them. It's testament to the coaches and the work that they put in. There's Niall there, Arius, who I'm working with a lot. There's Jenny. There's so many of them, and it's great to see the rewards paying off for them as coaches and for us as boxers.
Yeah, no, it really comes across when I speak to anyone from the gym, just what it means to be a part of that setup. Talk to us about your kind of team. You've got management in place and I presume plenty of support from your family as well.
Yeah, I've unbelievable support from my family. They've supported me since I was a kid. They've always supported me with anything I've done. My mother driving me here, there and everywhere for training. My dad working around the clock as well. To support it, so I'm signed with Ian Gochran. We actually train in the gym together as well, so he trains in Unit 3 as well, and Niall, the coach there, put me through to him, and that's even he'd been following me previously, and that's how we ended up linking up. And I got to know him personally from training with him, and he's a great guy, a great manager, and I'm looking forward to our journey together. And yeah,
the landscape in professional boxing is famously like a roller coaster, essentially. Lots of ups and downs, and you need to have people that you can trust around you. So when it comes to management, that's an important decision to make, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really important decision to make, and I took my time with it. There was a few people who I was looking at signing with, but I really did take my time with it. And it wasn't for any particular reason. I didn't sign with any of the other guys or anything like that, but I'd personally got to know Ian, so I just had, we had that kind of connection together and that a friendship, yeah. And I seen how well he was doing with his lads that he was already managing, so that was the route I took, and I'm happy with the decision. So yeah, looking forward to where it goes with Ian. And yeah, it can be a difficult sport, and the highs are high and the lows are low, so you have to be careful and try and select the correct people around you. And I think that's what I've done.
Yeah, it's a key part of being successful in the sport. The other side of it obviously takes place in the ring. So I understand you don't have a rock solid knowledge on when your professional debut is taking place, but there's work going on in the background to try and give yourself the best crack at making a big splash.
Yeah, there's plenty of work going on in the background. From what I'm hearing, it's looking like this summer, for definite this summer. It's looking like a big one. I can't confirm anything at the minute because I don't know for definite myself, but as soon as I have a date in place, I'll be sharing it on my social media so I can get all the support get as much support as I can. And yeah.
You're presumably, though, training and preparing like it's a dead cert that it's taking place anyway. We're going to talk about the physical preparation side of things now and the lifestyle that you have to lead as a fighter. I know commitment to the sport, commitment to training is massive, be it amateur or professional. What does change from your experience, your perspective or your expectations? What changes when you go from the amateur game to the professional one?
Well, I suppose it's a bit of a cliche, but you're trying to slow it down because there's more rounds in professional, even though you're starting off with some people start with four, some go straight into sixes, but you're trying to slow it down. Amateur boxing is more point scoring, and professional boxing is trying to hurt them when you're in there and trying not to get hurt as well. So you have to be aware defensively and work on a lot more strength work and longer runs, more rounds in sparring, more rounds in the pads, bags, longer sprint sessions, just things that will help to come across into the ring and into the fight when it's time to fight.
You would be a relatively experienced amateur coming out of the amateur ranks. Like you racked up a huge amount of fights. That's presumably going to count towards you when you get into the ring in the professional game as well.
Yeah, I had probably over 100 fights anyway, and a lot of them were international fights in different countries and all across Europe, America. So I was very lucky to get to travel all over the world. I was boxing with Port Leash as an amateur all through my amateur career, and they gave me a lot of amazing opportunities.
In terms of some of the training you mentioned there changing when you're training for a professional fight, what aspect of your technique and your skill set do you think will be your strongest or the thing that might give you an edge on opponents going forward?
Well, it's really hard to know that until you're in there, but from sparring some of the lads, you know, they say you have a good boxing brain, or you're good in your feet, or little things like that. So it's about putting it into play, and what I think, using my speed, using that amateur, not losing that amateur experience that I have and that skill set that I have from amateur boxing, but then adding different things into for the pro game, like sitting down on my shots a little bit more, or, you know, touching little shots and then trying to hurt them with a big shot. So just little things like that, but not losing what I've gained over the years either.
And is there a difference between the weight that you've been fighting at an amateur and the weight you're going to fight at a professional? Like, tell us, what's the weight you're going for in the professional game?
So as an amateur, I finished my career at 71 kilos, which is light middle or super welterweight as an amateur, but I was really only a 67 kilo boxer, but I won my fights at 71 kilo. I won the Celtic Cup, was my last two fights as an amateur. I beat an Irish guy in the semi-final, and I beat the number one Canadian at 71 kilos in the final. But as a professional, I'm looking at starting out maybe just under welterweight, which is about 66 kilos, and then hopefully, all going well, getting down to super lightweight, which is just under 64 kilos. So it's a bit of a drop, but there's a bit of a difference as well, because you have your day before weigh-in, you only weigh in once and you can rehydrate, whereas in the amateurs you have to weigh in every day, and yeah, you have to stay consistent with your weight, whereas with the pros you rehydrate.
Yeah, we're going to talk about nutrition in boxing, how to fuel a professional fighter, and how Kian got into fighting in the first place, all after the break.
Health and fitness with the newly refurbished Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. Take the plunge in a new routine with our swimming pool, plunge pool, jacuzzi, sauna and steam room. For more, visit MidlandsParkHotel.com. Midlands
103. You're very welcome back. I am joined in studio by Mount Mellick's Kian Reddy. He's just announced that he's going professional after a fantastic amateur career. Kian, just before the break, we were speaking about the weight that you're going to fight at. And this is a crucial decision to make ultimately, because as you said there, weighing in for amateur fights is very different to weighing in for the professional fights. So there is an adjustment you can make. And obviously, the lighter you can fight at in the professional game, the hope is that you can carry your power down the weights. But you need to balance that with being healthy as well. It's a tricky one to figure out.
Yeah, it is a tricky one to figure out. So that's down to kind of like when you're in the big fights and you have time to recover and stuff, get a nutritionist and somebody who knows or sets you them plans. And you, as an amateur, you kind of know how much you have to lose or what you lose in a session and things. But when you're eating clean as well, it kind of comes off you a bit quicker. So I'm going to have a nutritionist who I'm going to work with, and he'll set the meal plans and he'll monitor my weight and my body fat percentage and how far we are out from the fight, so we can work towards the day. And then when I'm in the ring, I know I've done it all properly. And yeah.
How much of a difference does it make getting into that ring, knowing that aside from the physical training, that you've done the nutrition side of things properly as well?
Yeah, it's a massive difference. If you're in the ring, or if you're going into the ring and you know, I haven't put it all in training, or I haven't put it all in at home, and going out at the weekends when I shouldn't have been, or, you know, just things like that. Every little percentage adds up, especially mentally and physically. But if you go in there, it's a dangerous place. And if you go in there not knowing you've done everything, it could end up affecting your performance very badly, from your mindset not being correct.
That's a funny one, isn't it? Because, like, you could technically be ready to go. You could, in terms of training, have done absolutely everything. But if there's just something undermining your confidence, it can take away all your technique. It could take away your power if your mindset isn't where it needs to be in going into a fight, because it's mano a mano, head to head with someone else. And if their mentality is where it needs to be and yours isn't, that can be the entire fight.
Yeah, and we've seen that so many times when people have been in the big fights, but they just haven't put it in training, or their head isn't in the right place. So yeah, you have to try and be there mentally as best you can, and prepare yourself for a big fight. Every fight in professional boxing is a dangerous fight. It's a dangerous fight, so you have to prepare yourself physically, mentally, so that when you're in there, you're ready and you've done all you can do and you're ready to go then.
Talk to me about how you got into boxing. Like, I imagine it's something that caught your attention as a youngster. Why was it that you did get into it?
So when I was a child, I started taekwondo. I did that for a few years.
Okay.
And kickboxing then until I was about 10. I did it. My dad always kept me doing something. Like, if I wasn't, I had to have some music as well. We were always playing music as kids.
What kind of music would you play?
Country music is massive in my family. My mother is actually a relation of the Sheeran family band.
Okay.
So her mother is a Sheeran. So country music is very
good stuff.
Big.
And would you play, what instruments would you play?
I play guitar. I can play the tin whistle a bit as well. Yeah. So when I'm not training or working, we'd be down at a country music session or a sing-along, and we'd be playing all the music that, yeah, I love music. I love all the old American country music, Buck Owens and Dolly Parton. And
good stuff.
So I've gone with the nickname, the Country Kid, for my
Kian, I like that.
Professional and boxing career, yeah.
That'll hopefully serve you well. So it was martial arts, really, as opposed to just boxing, that you fell in love with.
Yeah, as a child, I always did something. And then I moved school in primary school. I think it was fifth class I moved in. And one of my friends, Shane, he told me I have to give him a shout-out on the radio. So, Shane Hoolan.
Good man.
He said, make sure you give me a shout-out. So, yeah, his dad was a coach in Portlaoise Boxing Club. And at the time, I think I wasn't doing much kickboxing, or maybe you finished for the season at the time, you know, April, summertime or whatever. So, but we were still in primary school, and I remember I got big into playing Xbox, and like I was hooked on it, playing the Xbox and playing video games the whole time. And then he said, right, come on. I said, what? He goes, he rocked up at the door one day with him and his dad. He goes, you're coming to the gym. So I went to the gym with him, and ever since then I stuck at it. I was kind of consistent with it since then. So I think since I was about 10 or 11, and yeah, I just liked it ever since. And that's really how I got into it. Saw myself improving over time. It didn't happen overnight. I lost my first two fights, won a few, lost a few, but I saw myself improving, and that was like an addiction to see yourself improving, to see yourself coming along and developing. That was a great feeling, and that's what motivated me to keep going back and continue to try and improve.
If there's any parents listening, then talk to us about what it was like being a kid going into a boxing club. What kind of environment was it, and what kind of lessons did you learn when you were young?
I was the first time when you go in, I felt like all eyes were on me. You know, I was like, oh no, I was nervous.
Yeah.
But growing up through it, then you should never be. There's some, like, I'd always say to a kid who was there on his first day, like, don't be nervous. Just copy the bigger lads and follow us. You know, because there's a new person there nearly every night. You know, there's so many. So you should never feel like that. Don't be afraid to try it. Like, it doesn't matter what sport it is. Get in and have a go and do your best at it, you know. And don't ever feel intimidated. And if you're that guy who's there for a while, or that girl who's there for a while, don't be afraid to go to the new person either and say, come on, follow us. Because that could really help them for that day if they're nervous. Because I remember after a couple of times when I was there and I was a bit nervous, the bigger lads would come to me and put their hand on my shoulder and say, right, come on, follow us along. Or if you're getting confused, just watch us, you know, don't be nervous. So, yeah.
It makes a big difference when someone makes that effort. And then when you're older, you realise that's not that much effort to make. I can do that.
100%.
And you know what big a difference it makes.
Yeah, because we were all that person once.
Yeah.
Just starting out and nervous. Most people are nervous when they start out, whether it be the gym, playing soccer, playing Gaelic. I used to play Gaelic and I was absolutely useless, so I went across the box right then, and that's really it. Yeah.
Okay. Obviously then you would have looked up to some of the bigger guys in the gym when you were a kid and that, but who would have been your role models and heroes when you were growing up from the boxing world or the martial arts world, that type of thing?
I'd always follow some a lot of local people, because you know them personally.
Yeah.
More so, I would follow the likes of Sugar Ray Leonard, was probably my all-time favourite boxer. Muhammad Ali, the greatest ever. Katie Taylor, I love Katie Taylor as a boxer, but as the person she is as well, how humble she is, the success she's had, but she's still such a humble person. Like, I really looked up to that. But then I had the likes of TJ Doheny in the gym, who I already mentioned, you know, world champion. There were so many talented lads in the gym as well, who I looked up, and I'd always look at them and, you know, try and copy what they were doing. And to have that kind of them kind of lads around, even now, like, I'd still look at a lot of the Irish boxers, like, who were doing so well, the likes of Paddy Donovan, who is an incredible boxer as well. There's so many Irish people that I could name, Gary Cully, who I train with. There's so many of them. I'd look at them more so as because they're like my friends too, and to see how well they're doing, that really motivates you. But when you just see somebody online, you don't really have that connection as much as you would as somebody who's a friend.
Sounds like that's something important to you, is personal connections,
yeah.
Having those relationships. Does that give you a bit of energy and a bit of fuel in your own life?
It does, you know, because, like, I was looking through my old messages there the other day, and I had a message from TJ Doheny in 2018, I think, when he was fighting Daniel Roman for World Unification title, and he said to me, you know, I can see something in you, just stick at it. I think you're going to do it. I think you're going to make it, I suppose, or I can't remember the exact words he used, but it was incredible. Like, that was a massive motivation for me. Personal connections are very important in and out of gyms, because if you're good people motivating you around, like, in the gym, like, the likes of lads, we'd all be pushing each other on, and, you know, genuine people who want to see other people doing well, it's very important to have them people around you. And I'm a big believer in success breeds success, and positivity breeds success. You know, having these people who are positive and want to see you win and help you to win, that's a massive, massive role and a massive factor for getting in there fully confident.
Yeah, look, I think you made a point there. There haven't been enough professional fighters coming from this region over the years. So hopefully, not just yourself, but that there's going to be a new wave brought forward, led by the likes of yourself and Paul Lunam, and following the footsteps of TJ. That would be great. Yeah. You've been great with your time here today. So thanks for coming in to talk to us. And we look forward to following your career with great interest.
Perfect. Thanks very much for having me. It's been brilliant being on. Thanks very much.
Next on this week's show, we hear about the mighty work being done by an Offaly Cancer Support Centre and how the work is being done in an underfunded environment.
Health and fitness with the all-new Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club. With fitness classes to suit everyone, experience the warmth at 30 degrees in our dedicated spin studio. Discover all this and more on MidlandsParkHotel.com. Midlands
103. Now, a piece has come out in the national media highlighting the challenge that cancer patients face in terms of a postcode lottery. Coming from areas of social deprivation can count against you. Looking at the longer term picture, Avril Power from the Irish Cancer Society has recently said that the lack of investment in the Irish National Cancer Strategy is risking sending Ireland backwards in terms of cancer outcomes. John Conroy from DOCAS here in Offaly joins us to look at this particular story. John, from your perspective and in your experience speaking to those in the treatment and support community, what do you think the consequences will be if there is a continued lack of investment in the cancer strategy?
Well, I think it's very clear from the National Cancer Strategy set out in 2016 that there would be an investment of €20 million on an ongoing basis, up to €140 million to the end of that lifespan. And, you know, it's very clear that in the last 5 years, that investment hasn't happened from a government level. So therefore, access to treatment, access to, you know, there's a clear lack of radiographers in the country. Without investment in the National Cancer Strategy, we're not going to be able to continue the improvements that we've seen over the last number of years. Survivorship rates, thankfully, have increased in Ireland. Avril Power of the Irish Cancer Society stating that without continued investment in the National Cancer Strategy, survivorship rates may fall. We're going to see a doubling of cancer incident rates in this country by 2045. We're all seeing that. We're seeing that in the local cancer support centres. And it's very clear in the Midland Regional Hospital Tullamore that there is a very high incidence of cancer rates. So without continued investment in the National Cancer Strategy and the implementation of all the recommendations in that strategy, we may see us going backwards in terms of the progression that we have made. I suppose that comes down to, as well, then from a cancer support point of view, we've advocated hugely over the last year with the psychosocial oncology model of care. We fit very much into that framework, that referral pathway. And again, we fall into the cancer strategy. And without continued investment in that, we're not going to be able to continue to be able to provide the supports that we have. So it just, we'd like to see government just making a clear commitment on implementing that strategy.
Just looking at some of the figures in front of me here, John, we have higher than average breast screening, cervical screening and bowel screening rates in this country than in the OECD. 74% breast screening versus 54%, 72% for cervical screening versus 56%, bowel screening 49.5% versus 36%. So if the investment was put in, then it looks like the public's acquiescence and cooperation in terms of screening rates are quite high.
Yes, I suppose, like, again, these programs are great, but they're limited in their scope. So, you know, you have to be a certain age to be able to fit into the category of falling into the screening programs. We're seeing people now much younger getting a cancer diagnosis. So these, we need to broaden the screening programs to be able to get everyone into that frame. Early cancer diagnosis is key, and early cancer diagnosis is vital to long-term success. And we want to see survivorship rates increase. So yes, absolutely, I agree with what you're saying, but if we can't broaden these programs, we're not going to be able to catch cancer in its lowest form.
doubling of the numbers by 2045 is a real concern, obviously. And is it simply a case of a lack of expansion, a lack of investment is what's behind the rising numbers as far as people in your line of work can tell?
Look, I think we're seeing a growth in our population in Ireland. That's without a shadow of a doubt. You know, we're seeing a huge expansion in population growth, and with that will obviously come a higher incidence of cancer diagnosis. Thankfully, with the screening programs that are in place now, we are catching cancer diagnosis much quicker, and hopefully people have better outcomes. So there's a number of factors as to why we're going to see a doubling of incidence of rates of cancer. But then obviously there's a lot of other stuff. There's a lot of other factors that may be partaken in that as well. Lifestyle choices, environmental concerns. So look, it's a very stark consequence. And again, without the investment, we're not going to be able to continue to meet the demands and the needs that are there. And it's very important that people have clear access. Sláinte Care outlines that people need to be able to access healthcare in their community. And without the investment in the National Cancer Strategy, that's not going to be possible.
Yeah, just on a point you mentioned there, the likes of vaping, binge drinking amongst the young population, obesity rates that are much higher here than elsewhere in Europe and have been on the rise across the continent in recent years. This all contributes to driving those numbers up as well. So there's a lot of issues to tackle if you're talking about it from a state health treatment perspective.
Yeah, look, there's a much bigger picture at play here. I suppose as a cancer support centre, we've tried to diversify the services that we're delivering, and we're not just focusing on supporting the people that may have a cancer diagnosis. We're delivering nutrition programs for the general public so that people have awareness. Again, you know, incidence of obesity can contribute to certain cancers. So again, we're just trying to encourage people to engage in different programs. Obviously, the incidence of vaping, you know, there's very little research in relation to the long-term effects of vaping, and we're going to see more and more about that. And I think government acting on that is timely and crucial, particularly among the younger population. We're seeing a huge amount of incidence of vaping among young adolescents and young adults. So, you know, again, there needs to be a continued investment in relation to that. And without that, then that this is where we're going to see all these incidence rates increasing.
And a final point then, John. One of the last times we were speaking to you was in relation to the DOCA Centre, which was in a real shortfall of funding and faced major operating issues for the forthcoming time. How are things at the DOCA Centre now? What's the state of play in terms of the operation?
Yeah, well, I suppose we have been granted funding from the government. The 16 centres have been granted €3 million. So there's 16 centres that are full members of the Alliance of Community Cancer Support Centres and Services. And €3 million was allocated in 2023 budget. And currently we're going through the grant process with the National Cancer Control Programme to deliver that funding. We don't know the outcome as of yet in relation to the level of funding that we're going to be getting, but there is a commitment in relation to funding. So our main priority now is ensuring that people know that we're here for them, that delivery service is driven forward, and that we continue to be able to provide the supports to people that are looking for it. That's our main priority, but we are very appreciative of the government support and their investment and their acknowledgement of the community cancer support centres.
Thanks to John, and the best of luck to both himself and the Docas Cancer Centre. We're in the height of club running season, and we're now joined by the secretary of the Mullingar Harriers, Patrick Muldoon, who talks to us about their historic road race series.
Indeed, the Mullingar Road League has been part of the club's history for, I suppose, the past 50 years. We're indeed celebrating our 50th anniversary next year. So the Road League, the tradition of the Road League has evolved over the years from taking place in the streets of the town of Mullingar, actually, in our early years. And then, obviously, when they got busy, we moved the Road League out to Leddestown, just outside the town on the Tullamore, Road, just off Tullamore Road and close to Loch Ennell, which is a beautiful location. And then we moved to Belvedere House, actually in about 2007, and that was really successful. It has been really successful since then over the years in Belvedere, and we peaked numbers wise at about 700 or 800 per night actually for many years. The Road League, and it ran for four or five evenings often during May. So this year we're running the event on the three Wednesdays of May, the 8th, the 15th and the 22nd in Belvedere. And it's a 5K run, really suitable for all abilities. It's a fun run and walk as well as a run. And it's really to encourage people to get out and to get active. And we will indeed have athletes from many clubs running as well. So there is the competitive element, of course, and athletes are competing for category prizes as well from, I suppose, the age categories from junior, senior, from senior certainly on to the master categories from age, like from 40 up to 70. So we have active athletes really across the board who will come to Belvedere to compete in this event.
That's brilliant. It sounds like there's a whole lot going on, and just what you touched on there, I think it's a great aspect of these road league races, is if you join a club, if you've just joined Mullingar Harriers, you get to know your running mates or your club mates quite well initially, but then when you take part in something like this, and maybe you do it for a second year, you start to get to know other athletes from other clubs, because it really is a social kind of event, and people have the chats at the start line and the finish line and this type of thing. So I imagine it's a nice social atmosphere to the event.
Absolutely, David. Wholeheartedly, 100% really, because we'll have a lot of representatives of the local clubs right across the Midlands competing. And it's really a great way for those who are new to running to really embrace the joy of running. And indeed, as we all know, there's, you know, so much conversation about wellness and mental health and the importance of getting out and really social connection. And that's what we try to embrace as well through, you know, an event like this. I suppose just briefly touching on Mullingar Harriers, have had the hugely successful Fit for Life programs over the last year. And indeed, our spring program actually attracted 120 registered participants, and that ran for 10 Monday evenings there just over the spring months. And indeed, it was continued over the past 5 weeks as a Fit for Five program to really, I suppose, link that introduction to running program really with this league, and try to encourage those participants, just as you said, to those who are new to the running club, to you know, to come and join in this initiative and to really make that connection, you know, into the sport a bit more.
A description that I'm reading of the environment that they'd be racing around as well, Belvedere House near Loch Ennel, like it sounds pretty unique, really enjoyable to be exercising in with a bunch of people.
It is. It's absolutely beautiful surroundings on the woodland trains in Belvedere, and indeed some of our own athletes and our younger athletes train there regularly on Saturdays and Sundays. And I suppose, like, just the location itself is a huge attraction. And like, we start there, just we often had our last year's start was just along the lakeside there. And, you know, on I suppose on a Wednesday evening, what more could you be doing, you know, coming out of work and looking forward to going out to Belvedere and, you know, being in the woods. And, you know, it's proven, like, to be in the woods is so healthy for oneself, and it's really refreshing and reinvigorating. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot been done to actually link the benefit of mental health with being in the woodlands. So I suppose we're really, you know, encouraging people to utilise this unique opportunity to be in Belvedere, really, because the series, to enter the series, is just €30 for the three events, and that includes entry into Belvedere. So it is a unique opportunity for those athletes and runners and joggers and walkers who might come and join us to, you know, to take in the beautiful surroundings of Belvedere. And on the final evening, we're going to have refreshments and a celebratory evening, if you like, when, you know, I suppose it'll be a social gathering, and that facilitate that social time of connection. The one other just aspect I really want to highlight, David, is just that this is also a fundraising initiative for a very, very worthy cause.
Yes.
So it's in aid of Tanzanian Heavenly Homes. And Tanzanian Heavenly Homes is a charity, a Mullingar-based charity. not-for-profit organisation who travel to Tanzania every year to help the forgotten elders and the poor there. And this charity was set up by Mullingar photographer John McCauley. And you might have, had some of our listeners, I'm sure, have heard of Tanzanian Heavenly Homes, and indeed would know of John McCauley's Trojan work over in Tanzania. And this June, the end of June, they're travelling out, and a group, I would say, of mostly young people are travelling out to Tanzania for 2.5 weeks, and they're going to do, you know, really excellent work in providing, you know, the basics of life and, you know, food. And they have built a beautiful center out there for those forgotten elders and the poor. And it really is wonderful work. And John's charity has no costs, zero costs, you know, zero administration costs. So everything goes directly to the charity. So we're really hoping that people will support the league, you know, to support Tanzanian Heavenly Homes as well. And they indeed will have an information stand on each of the evenings in the visitor centre, and their volunteers will be there to mingle, you know, with the athletics community. So we're all looking forward to that, you know, as well.
Yeah, it sounds like an extremely worthy event, Patrick. Just to touch on as well, there's a medal that entrants get as well. This one sounds pretty nice.
It is indeed, David, and thanks for mentioning that, because this is the Pat Finnerty Memorial Mullingar Road League, and really it's named in honour of Pat Finnerty, the late Pat Finnerty, who was a past chairperson of the club and who did Trojan service over the years, and also was a member of the Athletics Leinster Executive and Committee as also. But I suppose it's the medal is also, it's a commemorative medal, and it really is, I suppose, marking the memory of Pat Finnerty, but also a beautiful memento and memorability to have of the league. And I know a lot of running enthusiasts are collecting medals, you know, up and down the country, and you know they really have. I suppose it's almost like something that's it's a really pleasurable thing to do, to collect medals and to remember and to recollect your experience in, you know, in different events, because a lot of us have who are into fitness and into running. You know, we remember certain, you know, events and certain locations for particular reasons. And when we reminisce on experiences, you know, it's a very joyful thing to do. And I think a lot of people who might pick up this medal will remember the experience, hopefully the pleasurable experience that they might have this May, running around the beautiful woodland trails in Belvedere, and perhaps recalling the connections that they may have made through this event.
And if you want to enter the league, go to myrunresults.com. Thanks to Patrick Muldooney, and good luck to the Mullingar Harriers this month. When we return, you meet a man in love with the sport of hurling, and we check in with Midlands Warriors amid a special announcement for them.
Health and fitness with the all-new Midlands Park Health and Fitness Club, where relaxation meets rejuvenation. Find out more at midlandsparkhotel.com. Midlands
103. Trevor Fletcher created history in the Offaly Senior Hurling Championship as the manager of Shinrone. He's now coaching the Down Intercounty team. He joins us on Health and Fitness to talk about his decision to take on the Down gig and what it is about the game he loves so much. First up, why go up to Down?
Obviously, we had a fantastic time at Shinrone, and you know, I was just a small cog in the wheel that got him over the line the first day, and you know, we kind of had a feeling KK were going to come out the second day, and rightly so, they had a fantastic win. And I suppose getting to the latter part of your question, yeah, look, there was a few offers on the table, but I suppose for myself, you know, I aspire to go as far as I can, both coaching-wise and manager-wise. So Ronan, the manager from Down, Ronan Sheen, gave me a call, and, you know, I was quite excited when I got the call, because Down, you know, Joe McDonough is the second tier in hurling in the country. So I knew it was going to be a very, very good standard. So when I met Ronan, you know, we spoke for about 3 hours, mainly all hurling, to be honest. And, you know, after 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, if you kind of like somebody or you're willing to work with somebody. And I knew that with Ronan. So it was an easy yes for me to go in as a coach with Down.
So my next question is a two-parter. What surprised you about the job so far, and what's gone along the lines that you expected?
Well, I suppose, just like I alluded to earlier on, the surprise, I suppose, is the strength and the pace of the intercounty players that they play at. You know, to be fair, at club level, you're still coaching the same way as you are at county level, but it's just that tad faster and there's more strength in it. So that kind of, look, obviously, there's no other big surprise other than that for me, to be honest with you. Sorry, what was the second part of the question, David?
And then, I suppose, the things that you did expect that have rang true over your time there.
Yeah, well, I suppose the biggest thing I see is home advantage is huge, you know, especially in Joe McDonagh. Like, even in the 2A league, it's very hard to overturn teams when you're going away, because a lot of teams are very steady and very formidable in their home ground. So for me, having home advantage is huge.
Then to talk about the role itself, not just with Down, but in your previous positions as well. Talk to me about coaching. What is it about coaching that gives you that personal payoff? What motivates you about it?
Yeah, I suppose it's improving that individual, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch. You know, I would be very, very big into people management as well. And, you know, you can't get on with everybody. But for me, it's getting to know that person, his family, what he works at, and as well as trying to improve them on the pitch individually and also collectively as a team. You know, you get a great satisfaction of out of that, to be honest with you. But more so off the pitch, you know, I still have a lot of good friends, if you want to call it, from Shinrone, obviously Belmount previously, and even my first gig in Silvermines, I still actually talked to quite a few of them. So for me, that's the bonus of building that friendship with them.
I know from speaking to you, I know from looking at the work you've done at clubs and now at county level, and even from listening to you when you work as an analyst commentator on our radio station for Offaly Hurling Games as well in the past, you have an unbelievable passion for the game. But I want to know where and how did hurling start for you?
I suppose Ross Graves, where it all started with me, and I suppose my uncle Franny at the time, he would have been playing with Ross Gray, and he kind of got me out poking around then. And Lord of Mercy, Jim Sheedy was in Ross Gray. He's actually a Portroom man. He's a brother of Liam Sheedy. He was the one that kind of came into the schools in Ross Gray and got things moving there. And, you know, we had quite a successful time at underage with Ross Gray. And then that probably led to playing with Tipperary at underage going forward, you know. So that's where I suppose the love of my game came from. And but I suppose, you know, I enjoyed it all the time. I love playing it still. I still try to play a little bit of junior, David.
Good man. And what about the challenges? I know, obviously, in terms of working with the Down hurlers, they're not next door to you at all. So we'll take that the travelling is a bit of a challenge. But to talk us through the other aspects that that do give you those challenges.
Yeah, look, the challenge driving is actually not too bad for me. I drive for a living, so driving aspect side of things is okay for me, to be honest with you. I suppose the other aspect of intercounty, I won't say it's more time consuming, but you do put a lot of more thought process into analysis of the other teams, analysis of your own team. You know, you get to straight away that night after a game, you get the game, you know, and you kind of look back on it and you say to yourself, how can we improve? So, you know, that side of things at intercounty level would be more consuming say than club level. You're constantly trying to see how to improve both the team and even some individuals on the team. So definitely the analysis and preparing would be a lot more.
Yeah, I imagine there's no shortage of, like, there's no end to the time that you could put into it if indeed you had that time to spare, which naturally people at the best of times don't. Then a final question, Trevor, and you've been great with your time, is to look at things generally. You're with the Down hurlers at the moment, and by the sounds of it, you don't want to put a ceiling over anything with your time in hurling. What the next step is, probably fair to say you haven't decided yet, be it staying with the Down or anything beyond, but you're still looking to develop and you're still looking to learn.
Absolutely. Look, I really, really am enjoying my time at Down, and I really am getting to know the players and Ronan a lot better, and it's taken a while for that to develop. So I that's probably up to Down whether they want to keep me next year going forward, but I'm very happy where I am. And absolutely, look, if an opportunity in a few years' time came closer to home, let it be, you know, anywhere, both club or county, obviously you'd consider it.
Finally, on this week's show, we're looking at Midlands Warriors or FC. The club held a big do at the Grand Hotel in Moat on Wednesday. This was to announce the securing of and development of a new sports ground. Midlands Warriors are growing fast. They're bringing in plenty of new members. The club's PRO, Celine Slevin, and the director of rugby, Graham Ross, both spoke at the event. But we're going to hear from the MC on the night, Martin Horan, with a few nice words on rugby and community.
Interesting thing that Graham made reference to, and indeed Celine did as well, and it's about community. And I think it's very interesting looking around this room. It's a sort of a fantastic mix of people from this community. And Midland Warriors, to me, represents something that is very good in this town and in this area, and is very good actually throughout Ireland. And we don't seem to see that or read about it or hear about it in our media enough. And I think there's a lot of good things happening that people just don't hear enough about, and tonight here is one of those. I asked Graham the other night what was his objective for the session here tonight. He says, I hope people will leave the room feeling excited. I think you can sense from Graham himself the level of excitement and commitment that he represents. I think he didn't say this, but on my own behalf, as something of an outsider to the club, I'd like to thank Graham, I'd like to thank the committee, I'd like to thank all of the volunteers, those 37 coaches that he talked about. I think that's phenomenal. I think it's fantastic. Take care.
That's another Health and Fitness in the Bag. Thanks to everyone involved on this week's programme. Joe Cooney and Country Roads follows the news. Have a fantastic long weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.